regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you here on a snowy Monday in Central Virginia where, Friday they were talking about like maybe an inch, maybe less. Then it got upgraded to like 1 to 3. Last night it became 3 to 5. Now we're hearing like 4 to 9. So we'll see what happens. But we're kind of like the post office here. You know, neither rain nor snow nor darker of night can keep us from our appointed rounds. If the power goes out, that can keep us from our appointed rounds. But so far, knock on wood, fingers crossed, everything is 5 by 5. So a couple of things before we get to today's interview with Ashley Hablinski talking about the nearly $1 million grant given to the University of Wyoming Law School's Firearms Research Center to help develop a pro-Second Amendment initiative. Well, not a pro-Second Amendment initiative, but a Second Amendment initiative, which I guess is a pro-Second Amendment initiative. When you're recognizing the right to keep and bear arms as a real right, that's pro, isn't it? But again, a couple of things we need to get to. First of all, the Supreme Court orders came down about 9:30 this morning. No action taken on any of the Second Amendment cases that it was that the justices were slated to discuss in conference. That would include Viramontes versus Cook County, the challenge to Cook County's ban on so-called assault weapons, Gators Customs Guns versus Washington, Duncan versus Bonda, challenges to Washington and California's magazine bans. You also had a couple of prohibited persons cases, Vincent versus Bondi, Duarte versus U.S. versus Duarte, dealing with the lifetime ban on firearm possession for nonviolent offenders. Those cases were not rejected. No action was taken. So presumably, these cases are going to be relisted for this week's conference. It is possible that those cases could be dealt with in a miscellaneous order, but I don't think that's likely. So I think the most likely outcome is that, again, these cases will go before the justices at least one more time. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that the justices are going to take at least one, if not both of the magazine cases, as well as the challenge to Cook County's ban on so-called assault weapons. Also, just a reminder, there is 1 week left for you to vote in the Gundies, GUNDIES.com, thegundies.com. Tom Knight and John Petrolino up for Best 2A Writer, Bearing Arms Cam and Company up for Best Podcast. I would strongly encourage you to go to thegundies.com and cast your vote for any and all of your favorites. Hopefully, we do make the list, but yeah, do what you can to support those are pro-Second Amendment journalists out there. All right. Now, let's get to today's conversation with Ashley Hablinski, Executive Director of the University of Wyoming Law Center's Law School's Firearms Research Center, talking about this new Department of Education grant, which I'm thrilled. And I just, again, I can't imagine that the gun control groups are going to be happy about this, even though, you know, this is going to be, I don't think it's going to be a bunch of pro-Second Amendment talking points. It sounds like what the center is going to develop really is meant to be an initiative that will help bring a greater understanding of the right to keep and bear arms, not only to educators, but hopefully their students as well. A fact-based initiative that, again, because it recognizes our right to keep and bear arms, I think is pro-Second Amendment from that standpoint. And something, I mean, I don't know about you, I didn't learn anything about the Second Amendment when I was in school. We maybe spent an hour on the Constitution, but we didn't really delve deeply into any of the rights in the Bill of Rights. So I would love for K-12 students to start getting a little bit of an education, on our founding documents in general, but yeah, specifically on the importance of our right to keep and bear arms. Take a look and a listen. Ashley, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's so good to see you. It's been way too long.
I know. It's been a while.
It has been, but this is a great topic to get you back on the show. I am super excited about this. University of Wyoming Law Center, Firearms Research Center, getting a nearly $1 million grant from the Federal Department of Education to develop a Second Amendment curriculum for K-12 students.
Yeah. So it's not curriculum per se. We're doing stuff for students and teachers, but one of the biggest kind of missions is to work with teachers to give them the tools and access to scholars in order to have a more nuanced and kind of deeper understanding of the Second Amendment. And then they're going to be writing curriculum for us to kind of get a sense of, you know, how they would be able to apply it in the classroom. But I guess to back up a little bit, this grant's interesting because it's for the American History and Civics grant or seminar. It's a very long title, and it's in honor of the 250th, or my new favorite word, semi-quincentennial, which is the word they used for the application. And so it was for civics programming of all types, looking at the Constitution. So obviously having the Firearms Research Center and the fact that we do a lot of Second Amendment law, it was a no-brainer that that's what we would focus in. And I'm going to be honest, we were quite surprised, very like happy, but very surprised that we got the grant because, you know, what people don't understand, and I've seen, you know, kind of in the news, you know, the Trump administration gave this grant. And like, technically that's true, but that's not how grants work. I've been a grant reviewer before. And so, you know, when you submit a grant application, there's a blind panel of people from across the country who are in the field. So teachers and specialists who will be kind of enacting your work or being involved in your work. And so, and for me, I've done stuff with like NEH, National Endowment for the Humanities in the museum world. So the people who are reviewing and grading your application that basically make the decision is a bunch of people you don't know that could have varying opinions on the subject matter and varying knowledge levels on the subject matter. So this wasn't like a, you know, a couple of people on high were like, let's do this. This was a buy-in that was kind of, you know, it transcended administration or kind of political boundaries, which I thought was really, really cool. And although I'm biased, you know, hopefully it's a indicative of the writing that I did for it. So that was really exciting. And so what we're looking at doing is there's multiple facets to it. So the first half is tools for teachers. And we're going to be creating in the next 2 years, 12 instructional videos that will teach the teachers, but then they can also use in the classroom if they choose on various Second Amendment related topics. So this part is kind of has nothing to do with the arguments back and forth, the debate back and forth. This is just, here's the textual history of the Second Amendment. You know, here's the history of militias in the colonies. Here's the evolution of firearms technology since the founding era. You know, here's information on the 14th Amendment, or what the Bruin decision calls the second founding era. You know, the National Firearms Act, the Heller decision, the Bruin decision. So this is kind of your just your straight, if you were in school and they turned on a boring video, you're going to get me probably. I think it's going to be me. You know, just kind of giving you that overview of history without any real editorializing, which is really nice because that is so hard for people anywhere, you know, to try to sift through all the politics and the talking points and the rhetoric and the like fights that everybody gets in and find real good scholarship. So we're excited to create that. And then a project we've been working on for a while now that the grant is allowing us to kind of beef up and add an AI tool to help teachers work through primary source material is we're putting together a historical firearms law database that will be free to the public, free to teachers, and then they get access to this AI tool. And it is all firearms laws throughout history, but it's not just a listing of the laws. We actually are doing PDF scans of the laws themselves, because there are other databases out there, but they don't typically have all of the law. Like it may give the beginning of it and then an ellipse and then it finishes the law. But there was a judge, I want to say in New York maybe, that started requiring that we have scans of the actual like full text. Okay. So our database will have that full text and allow teachers to be able to see all of it rather than kind of a summarized version, which is really neat.
Absolutely.
And then the other side is teachers engaging with the content. And so we're going to be working with them to have a better understanding so that they can better work with their students on the subject. So we're doing quarterly webinars. So we'll do 8 webinars where we'll take topics surrounding the Second Amendment. They could be more modern topics. They could be historical topics. And we'll kind of give a quick framework of the historical significance of it, what the, you know, situation is. And then we'll have scholars from differing either disciplines or backgrounds or even opposing views. And they'll be able to say, you know, here's my, you know, side of the argument, here's my side of the argument, or here's my take, and here's my take. And then the teachers can actually just engage with the scholars and ask real-time questions in a very, you know, productive and not combative environment, which I don't think people get a lot of opportunities to. We actually just did this, like a test run, I guess, at our conference in November, where we had a fireside chat between my director, George Moxery, who is in his own research a pro-2A scholar, and Megan Walsh, who is a visiting clinical professor at, okay, you know who she is.
I do, yeah. University of Minnesota University Law School. Runs a clinic with the anti-gun attorney general, Keith Ellis. And we know Megan Walsh.
Okay. She's a very nice person.
I'm sure she is.
So we actually brought them both together and we had a conversation about the application of the founding era with Bruin and how the pro-gun side, you know, uses history in the Bruin, you know, how it's working in the court system, right? So how is the pro-gun side using it? And then how is the gun control side, you know, using that same history and interpreting that same history? So we did that. It was a really interesting, you know, it was a really interesting conversation. It will be up online at some point. Okay. On our website, so you'll be able to see it. But I wanted to do it in more of a fireside chat and not as much of a like sparring, you know, partnership, because we can see that in the courtroom, right? So we'll be doing those webinars so that they can engage with it. And then ultimately, we'll do a capstone conference where we'll be covering the costs of 100 teachers from around the country. And they'll come, they'll do a 2-day conference, they'll spend one day learning all about the Second Amendment from history, law, maybe engineering and technology. You know, we'll kind of beef it up so you can kind of get that holistic perspective on the Second Amendment and all of the different parts that go into understanding that. And then the second day will be workshops where we'll work with the teachers on how to discuss this topic in the classroom, how to answer, you know, difficult questions that may arise in the classroom, how to remove politics from the discussion in the classroom, you know, just so you can kind of really get a sense of, you know, how you can have a dialogue on this topic that has nothing to do with politics. And that's kind of what we need, is people to have a much deeper understanding of it and a much more respectful understanding of it so that they can hopefully impact how people view it in the future.
Yeah. I'm curious, actually. I mean, can you really divorce politics from this discussion? When you think about it, I mean, the Second Amendment is a political document, right? Obviously, you know, the debates around the right to keep and bear arms at the time of the 14th Amendment, very, very political, right? The Black Codes of 1865 in Louisiana, cited by the Ninth Circuit in the Lopez decision, which is now pending before the Supreme Court. I mean, that itself is a political document, right? You can't bring firearms onto plantations. It seems to be like the Second Amendment is sort of inextricably intertwined with politics.
So I think, you know, it's really interesting because the way that you're talking about politics is obviously right, right? Everything's kind of intrinsically tied to that. The way I'm framing it is not so much about that. I guess for me, it's the mudslinging and misinformation part of it that we're trying to remove. So I think you're right. And the way that I'm talking about politics, and I'm glad you pointed that out because that will help me kind of communicate it in the future, is I'm talking less about that and more about the general mudslinging and misinformation that gets thrown out there.
You don't want to turn this into a gun control debate in the classroom, in other words, right? This is about the history of the Second Amendment. This isn't meant to be, are you pro-gun or anti-gun? We should ban assault weapons. We shouldn't, right?
Okay. That's what I mean by it. So thank you, because this is one of the first times I'm talking about it. Because, you know, it's really just, and you know me, I'm all about the history first and foremost.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's about the fact that these are facts. You know, this is a part of the history. And, you know, I want people to strip away that, you know, argumentative conversation about assault weapons or magazine capacities and really just kind of look at the real text, what it says, and how, you know, we can talk about it, because I think that having better information out there will hopefully help, you know, maybe it's a trickle up effect, you know, if you educate right. the students, right, they become adults, and then hopefully we can have a much better understanding of the Second Amendment than we have now. So I don't think I've ever heard of a trickle up effect, but I guess we're going to attempt it.
Why not? You know, and you know, you are so right that this history, it's important that we learn this history. But to me, what's so great about Second Amendment history is you learn so much more about the history of the United States, right? Because the right to keep and bear arms doesn't exist in a vacuum. So, you know, when was this right particularly important? You know, and you can read Nicholas Johnson's Negroes and the Gun, The Black Tradition of Arms.
Who is a fellow of ours, by the way.
I am very glad to hear that.
We love Nick. I'm actually, hopefully he's going to be on our advisory board for the, because we will be we're putting together an advisory board right now. And we're talking to him about being on the advisory board for it.
Oh, so, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, again, you just learn so much more about this country, because the right to keep our arms has been a part of this country, despite what people who say, you know, the Supreme Court invented this individual right out of whole cloth and Heller. I mean, that very much is not the case. When you go back and you can look at, and even the debates over the Gun Control Act of 1968, there was this recognition that there's a right to keep and bear arms. In fact, one of the earliest arguments was over whether or not juveniles should be allowed to possess firearms. And that was an actual, you know, debate. Yeah. That was an unsettled question in the 1960s. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how this fleshes out over the next couple of years. What's the first thing that's going to roll out here with this initiative?
So the first thing that'll roll out will be our first webinar for teachers. Right now, it was kind of interesting because we got the grant, and then the next day the government shut down, which is why we've taken so long to say that we've gotten the grant, because I felt like it was maybe in poor taste. To me, and I could already read the headlines, right?
Right.
If we had announced it during it, you know?
Yeah.
The Second Amendment, you know, program.
Gun buddies before it shut down. Yeah.
Well, people aren't making money, right?
Right.
Like, so I was like, we're not talking about this. So we did get a little bit delayed. So next steps internally for us, we're actually meeting with our grants person on Tuesday for the first time.
Okay.
To get a better sense of, you know, all the boring reporting structures and all that. So I've been talking to people about this advisory board. And so really internally, it's making sure that they're in place. And it's going to be a combination of specialties. So we'll have George and I, obviously, and then we'll have, you know, 2A scholars, and then we'll have teachers. We've got one teacher that is from Wyoming that's working on a civics project right now, like a big statewide civics project. And then we do have another teacher who you probably know, but I won't say her name, I guess, yet. We'll announce it. You know her. She was back in the NRA TV days. And now she's a civics teacher in the Midwest. And she actually got permission to do a 2A class next fall.
Oh, wow.
And we had been talking to her beforehand. I guess, like, it's Antonia Okafor.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I didn't know she was a civics teacher. And so she reached out to us about this course that she's, you know, wanting to do. And so it all kind of came together. So, you know, we'll be working with her, and then we've got scholars, teachers. We'll probably have, because we always have a component with the Research Center on kind of suicide prevention and mental health, to what we do. So, Walk the Talk America will be there as well, just kind of to try to, you know, keep, it sounds silly and weird and tangential, but, you know, we will probably end up needing some of that kind of perspective. And then a firearms trainer, somebody who specializes in, you know, communicating with people, to actually have somebody with that kind of practical background on the advisory board. So we wanted to kind of grab as many different types of people within the firearms world as we could, so that it's not just George and I spewing really, you know, boring facts at people, and then they're like, I have no idea what you just said. So that's the next steps, at least for us, is just kind of confirming and ironing all that out and having our first meeting about how we reach schools across the country. You know, how it's not just Wyoming, it's not just suburban schools, but urban schools. To try to get, you know, a good cross section of the country. But then we will be doing a webinar. Will probably be our first thing in the beginning of next year. And then I know I'm trying to remember my schedule that I wrote for the grant back in July. And then we'll be working on writing the scripts for the instructional videos and getting that done a lot in the first year, getting those ready to go by the fall of next year so that they can be applied for teachers who are participating in the classroom. And then continuing those webinars, there'll be 8 of them. And then the capstone will be in 2027. So, you know, working with the teachers, communicating with the teachers over the next like year and a half, and then doing the capstone and asking them to produce, you know, sample curricula on the Second Amendment for us to review and give feedback as we kind of round out the grant. So it's kind of neat. You know, we're not just talking at teachers. We're letting the teachers engage with the content and then kind of throw stuff back at us and then having our advisory board and everybody kind of look at it, vet it, you know, see, you know, where their strengths and weaknesses in the program. And then we intend to continue this relationship with the teachers and continue doing an annual conference, Second Amendment conference for teachers across the country. It'll be interesting to see who wants to be involved. I know that yesterday my mom, who's a high school teacher, but not in social studies, made a comment to the social studies teachers at her high school. And one of them was like, yeah, yeah, I heard about it. I know. And kind of just like, you know, dismissed it. And then one of them was like, oh yeah, I look into it. That sounds really interesting. So I hope people give us a chance, I guess, is the one thing I'm hoping for, is that, you know, people won't just see, oh, guns, you know, and dismiss us, you know, across the board. I hope they give us a chance. That's why we're framing it in a way that gives people a chance to talk to everybody, to hopefully get those who may be skeptical about what we're doing in the room and engaging with the material, the you know, the historical record, the historical material in ways that they wouldn't. Because as you know, I mean, if you don't agree with firearms or you're super hardcore firearms, you know, you automatically like you live in your silo and you kind of shut down. And so we're trying to kind of bring a more human perspective, a deeper perspective, so that if you're not familiar with firearms or you're maybe hesitant about firearms, you're now feeling more welcome in an environment to learn and ask questions and not just be like, oh, well, I can't ask questions because I'll just get immediately shut down or whatever.
Gotcha. I mean, it sounds like, honestly, like the same mentality that, you know, a lot of firearms instructors bring to their training, right? They want that space to be welcoming to newbies, right? Somebody who's never shot a gun before, you go into a range, you know, and there are a lot of range operators who want that same thing. We want it to be a welcoming environment. And I'm glad that you're bringing that same ethos to this initiative as well, because you're right. I mean, there are some folks who just aren't going to be interested in this. But I hope that I'd like to think there are enough intellectually curious social studies teachers out there that this is going to be really popular. And actually, I hope that we can continue just kind of checking in with you and, you know, updating folks on what's going on with the initiative. Will the webinars, will we be able to watch these webinars at some point? Just the general?
Yeah. We'll post them on our website.
Okay.
We post everything on our website. We have a video library for everything because we actually do a monthly webinar. So if people are interested, we, outside of the grant, do a monthly webinar on a range of different firearms topics every month. So you're also welcome. That one's, you know, open to everybody. It's, you know, obviously it's free. It's a Zoom webinar. It's not the same Friday of every month because we want flexibility with the scholars' schedules. But and it's not just scholars. I mean, we've had lots of different people. We've had Devin Perkins talked about Kids to Kings on our webinar. Obviously, we've had Walk the Talk. I'm a little biased since I'm on the board. But, you know, we've had Mike on a couple of times. You know, we've done stuff on like modern laws. But then we've also had, you know, people from the engineering world and that kind of thing. So we do that anyway. So if you're interested in that, there's always something going on every month. And then these topics specifically. But yeah, we'll post them so that everyone can access them. Because also not every teacher is going to be able to log in, you know, on any given day. Obviously, yeah. They're kind of busy. They're kind of working during the day. So we'll make it accessible for everybody. But yeah, and it's nice. I think when we started the research center, what we learned, you know, was that there were people in universities around the country who were studying this or interested in this, but they were afraid to, you know, step forward and say, hey, I'm actually really interested in guns, because they were, you know, worried about the perception of that. They didn't really feel like they had a research center where they could come out explore the topic. Mm-hmm. And we found with our webinars, you know, thus far, and we do a lot of continuing legal education credit, which is those days we get hundreds of people online because, you know, lawyers have to do it in many states and they've been starved for firearms content because you just can't get it anywhere. Yeah. And if you do get it, it's usually massively biased, you know, and, right. and it's hard to sift through that, you know, through that. And so, you know, we've noticed, at least in the academic world, just people starved for this information. And so many more people interested in it than you would expect. And they've just been afraid to step up and say that they're interested. And so I'm hoping we'll get a similar response, you know, with teachers around the country, that people who've been looking for a way to talk about this and learn about this, but they just didn't want to, you know, go against the norm, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, fingers crossed that, I suspect that you will see that same level of interest. But Essie, again, super thrilled about this initiative. Really glad you could join us today to talk about it. Look forward to talking to you again in the future. If I don't talk to you before then, Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. And
you had shot.
And, well, not this year. Not this year.
Oh, no. Yeah. I guess I'll have to come to NRA.
You will. Okay. I should be. Or you can just come down to Virginia and hang out for a few days. You know, we can go to
you know Marcello. What? I can do that. I've been flying down to D.C. a lot because a friend of mine at the NRA is pretty sick. So I've been coming down to Virginia a lot. So yes, I will just add a day.
Well, you just let me know. All right. Ashley, thank you so much for joining me on the program today. And we'll do this again soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
My thanks to Ashley for joining us on the program. Looking forward to talking with her again in the new year. And again, just super excited about this initiative. All right. Before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a second. From city streets to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. That's why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather, designed to look sharp, last long, and tell a story of its own. This is my Modern Rugged Leather bag. Each stitch, each buckle, each strap reflects timeless craftsmanship. It's backed by a lifetime warranty, because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather, modern style, timeless durability, backed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. Shop the full collection and find yours today at modernrugged.com. Again, that's modernrugged.com. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Rhode Island. Woman charged in deadly pedestrian crash in Hopkinton has long history of offenses. And long, I think, is actually an understatement in this particular case. We're talking about more than 100 arrests, according to local media. Over the weekend, this individual named Shannon Goodbout, 41 years old, is accused of hitting and killing 70-year-old Roderick McLeod on Saturday morning. McLeod was out walking his dog. And according to authorities, Goodout veered out of the lane that she was in, hit McLeod before slamming into two telephone poles. When police arrived, they found illegal drugs and drug distribution products in the vehicle. No word if she was, you know, actively intoxicated at the time. But according to WJAR in Providence, Rhode Island, court records show that Goodout has been arrested more than 100 times for a wide range of offenses from, again, drug possession, car theft, driving without a license, to name just a few of them. To date, police say she's been issued 82 court warrants, has been arrested 102 times, but has only been issued about 40 citations. So it sounds like these arrests, low-level arrests, you know, nothing, maybe not even any felony charges, but just a repeated pattern of low-level offenses. 41 years old, 102 arrests. I mean, you got to work hard to rack up a record like that. And sadly, now she is facing felony charges. WJR says the last they heard from the police, Goodbout was supposed to appear before a justice of the peace as a criminal violator. She was still listed at the Rhode Island Hospital for injuries related to that that crash over the weekend. And according to WJR, a justice of the peace arraigned her as a violator for being on a suspended sentence / probation. Which again begs the question, how many times has Angela Godbout been sentenced to probation? I mean, it's entirely possible that she was actually under multiple probationary sentences when she allegedly struck and killed this 7-year-old man. And, you know, we talk a lot about these lengthy criminal histories involving felony offenses, right? And that, I mean, that's, again, inexplicable. How does somebody rack up a dozen more felony charges before the age of 30? You know, 8 or more convictions, and yet they're still out on the street. I still don't get that. It's unfortunately maybe a little bit more understandable when we're talking about, you know, misdemeanors or even citation level offenses. But the question still remains, what do we do with these prolific offenders if their crimes have not risen to the level of a felony, but they clearly cannot stay within the confines of the law? At some point, again, you've got to hit them with the maximum that's allowed by law, even for a misdemeanor, right? Which is basically 364 days in jail. I question how somebody can rack up 82 warrants, 102 arrests, and still be sentenced to probation for any crime going forward. But sadly for Godbout, I don't think she has to worry about that anymore, because now she is facing some incredibly serious charges for striking and killing a 7-year-old man out walking his dog. And again, maybe if we had found a way to take her cases more seriously to begin with, Mr. McLeod would be alive today. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Pennsylvania, where the headline reads, two other teen suspects in Washington Food Mart shooting arrested. No mention of the armed citizen aspect to this incident, but they do talk about in the body of the story. This was in Washington, PA, Western PA, near Pittsburgh. The Herald Standard newspaper reports the police have arrested the other two suspects accused in Sunday night's robbery at the Washington Food Mart, in which a customer was shot when she pulled out a concealed weapon in self-defense. 19-year-old Christian Xavier Petrine, 18-year-old Christopher Ellis Valpurgo, arrested on Friday, charged with attempted homicide and numerous other felony charges in connection with the incident at the convenience store. 17-year-old Julian Ashbury was arrested on Monday of last week, facing similar charges in the robbery and shooting. Police say the three teens walked into the store in Washington, PA, about 10:30 last Sunday, not yesterday, but a week ago, and attempted to rob it at gunpoint. There was a woman who was playing a video gambling machine who pulled out a handgun in self-defense. She was shot multiple times. City police officers responded shortly after the teens left the store. They tended to the woman's wounds before she was taken to a Pittsburgh area hospital for treatment. Police have not released her identity. They've not described the severity of her injuries, but they did say that she was stable when she was taken to the hospital. And apparently she did thwart this robbery. I mean, after the teen shot this woman, they then took off running. So I don't know that they were successful in committing this armed robbery. Unfortunately, again, this woman was shot as a result of her trying to protect herself. Investigators identified the three teens. They arrested Ashbury the following day. They later secured arrest warrants for Petrine and Ellis Valpurga. Searched a home in Washington on Friday, but were unable to locate the two teenagers. But they did take him into custody on Friday night. Now, Ellis Valpurga, charged with attempted homicide, carrying a firearm without a license, receiving stolen property, reckless endangerment, and two counts each of robbery and aggravated assault. Petrine facing related conspiracy charges to the felony counts. Ashbury also charged with conspiracy to commit homicide, firearms not to be carried without a license, possession of a firearm by a minor, two counts of aggravated assaults, and three counts each of robbery and reckless endangerment. The 17-year-old is being charged as an adult in this case, being held on $200,000 cash bond. We'll keep our eyes open to see if any more details become available. And, you know, again, we had a similar story last week where we talked about an armed citizen acting in self-defense who was shot. And, you know, as I said then, and I'll say it again, carrying a gun does not make you bulletproof. Doesn't turn you into a superhero. Doesn't mean that it's a guarantee you're never going to be injured or harmed in the commission of a violent crime. But it does, I believe, give you a fighting chance at survival It increases the odds, I believe, of you surviving an encounter with somebody who doesn't mind taking your life. In this case, it is unfortunate that the woman was shot. It does sound like, again, she was able to thwart that robbery. But, you know, also, I have to say, I don't know if she fired any shots at those teenagers. Maybe she was thinking that the display of that firearm was enough to scare them off. Maybe they shot her before she had a chance to defend herself. But it is, you know, it's not always, even if you have a firearm, it's not always the right thing to do to draw that firearm, right? If you believe that your life is in danger, absolutely. If not, better to keep it holstered. I don't know what those teens would have done. We don't know. They might have killed everybody inside that gas station. Or they could have run out the door as soon as they got the cash. But it sounds like this woman believed that her life was in danger. And again, it is unfortunate that that she was shot while acting in self-defense, but I am glad that it appears that she is going to recover. And I'm also glad that these three individuals are now facing a litany of criminal charges. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Some good Samaritans in Olathe, Kansas, who managed to save an 85-year-old woman who is being attacked by a hammer-wielding stranger. It doesn't sound like any of these Good Samaritans were armed, although we don't necessarily know that to be the case. Patricia Cowart is the 85-year-old woman. She was loading groceries into the trunk of her car on Sunday when a guy attacked her, like kind of out of nowhere. One of these Good Samaritans said he heard Cowart scream and realized that a man was viciously attacking her in the face with a hammer. So he ended up running over. He got between the suspect and the victim until police arrived. Police arrested Christopher Brewer on scene. Both the Olathe police and Cowart's family say the pair did not know each other. Patricia Cowart's son, Kent McCollum, said that Brewer, quote, would have continued beating her with a hammer until she was killed. He said, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Brewer's now been charged with felony aggravated battery with great bodily harm, and his bond set at just $35,000, which is pretty low, I have to say. McCollum is a little upset by that. He says, you know, assault with great bodily harm, I'd expect that if he got into a bar fight. This was clearly attempted murder and should be charged accordingly. The Johnson County DA didn't comment on the charging decision, but it did thank the customers who intervened on Cowart's behalf. Olathe police asking the public for help in figuring out the motive for the attack. According to WDAF in Kansas City, Brewer remained calm afterwards with the hammer in his hand. Good Samaritan said he was talking about being a person too, and you don't know what you're doing. Comments that didn't make a whole lot of sense. And again, we might not ever know what the motive was, and I guarantee you that the motive won't be a good one. But in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing to save a woman in need, these anonymous Good Samaritans in Olathe, Kansas, saving Miss Cowart from serious injury. She's going to have to undergo a couple of surgeries. She's actually going to have to go into a short-term rehab. So, I mean, she was injured here. She took a hammer to the face. But her son says that she's already talking about putting the ordeal behind her, living life to the fullest. She recently talked about traveling to Africa. And it sounds like she's got those plans when she gets out of rehab. So, again, we wish her all the best, Patricia Cowart. And, again, many thanks to those anonymous Good Samaritans who intervened and helped save her life there in Olathe, Kansas. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow for 2A Tuesday. Not sure who we'll be talking with and what we'll be talking about, but I guarantee it's going to have a direct impact on your right to keep and bear arms. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the rest of the day today. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. We've got not only myself and Tom Knighton, but we've got contributions from Ryan Petty, Carrie Sloan, And I believe we may have something from John Petrolino as well. If we don't today, it'll be up tomorrow at Bearing Arms. But again, be sure to check that out. If you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. And if you become a VIP Gold or Platinum member, you'll get even more benefits than if you just sign up at the VIP level. And one of those benefits, getting to take part in our weekly live chat, Hot Air's Ed Morrissey and myself. We do it every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Tom Knighton actually sat in for Ed last week. We've got a great time. I would love for you to be a part of this this coming Wednesday. So again, just use the promo code FIGHT when you go to bearingarms.com/subscribe and you sign up for a VIP Gold or Platinum membership. Have a great rest of your Monday, as good as back to work Mondays can be. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.